Gabby Roslin here. Thank you so much for listening. This week, we are really spoiling you. We have two fantastic guests for your ears. Firstly, it's the brilliant star who played King George in the biggest show ever, Hamilton. We, of course, chat all about Hamilton and the genius that is Lin-Manuel Miranda. And the story of how he got the part in Hamilton is amazing, trust me. Plus, working on huge films like Les Miserables, 1917, Star Wars, with Hugh Jackman, Anne Hathaway, George MacKay, and starring in impressive TV series Quiz with Michael Sheen, and Honor with Keely Hawes. Wow, what a CV! And stay tuned for Pixie Lott, one of the sweetest people on this planet. We talk about moving house with her partner in lockdown and their postponed wedding plans with her many bridesmaids. Also, writing and releasing her first album when she was only 14, and her work on The Voice Kids, which I love. She tells some amazing stories about collaborating with Stevie Wonder. Yes, Stevie Wonder and John Legend. Plus, writing and recording her new music through lockdown. Please, can I ask you a favour? Would you mind, please, following and subscribing by pressing the follow or subscribe button on the show? Now, I have to tell you, this really honestly does not cost any money. It's completely free. And then if you wouldn't mind, rate and review on Apple Podcasts, which is the purple app on your iPhone or iPad. You simply scroll down to the bottom of all of the episodes and you'll see the stars where you can tap to rate and press write a review. It would mean the world to us. Thank you so much. First up, King George himself, Michael Gibson. Enjoy. My teenage daughters both know every single word to Hamilton.
Do you know what? They probably know it better than I do, because, I mean, that's what I'm finding, is that there are kids out there who literally, like, I know the Goonies word for word, whereas kids these days know Hamilton word for word. And it's there are certain parts of Hamilton which I did and sometimes do try to rap along to if it's on in the car, and I still can't get it right. So.
That show is a worldwide phenomenon, and we have to start with that only because I dropped my daughter off at school and she was like, you are going to be speaking to the king. I mean, King George, Hamilton. Mum, do you not understand how enormous this is? And he won an award. So I know. But that's the excitement. So we have to start with that.
What do you want to know?
All right, take me back to the beginning when you got that call about, right, we'd like you to audition for Hamilton. Did you just go, what, the biggest show on stage ever?
Well, kind of. I mean, it rewinds a little bit further back than that for me, because I am officially a musical theatre geek. I trained in musical theatre, and I love... I'm normally listening to musical theatre or trying to trying to discover the latest musical. I'm currently trying to get the rights for a children's book at the moment, which I'm hoping to turn into a musical, which I'll tell you all about later. But so Hamilton started with me in the sense that I discovered it as a soundtrack after I'd seen In the Heights in London, the London version of it at the Southwark Playhouse, which I had some lovely friends in. And thought, well, that was really good. I should probably listen to this thing called Hamilton. So I did, and initially thought, wow, this is really good. But then over the course of about a week or 2 weeks, found myself not being able to switch it off. And every time I listened to it, just became more and more, it became deeper and deeper ingrained into me thinking, this is probably one of the most incredible things I've ever heard. It's up there with Stephen Sondheim and you know, Leonard Bernstein, and, you know, and just it, but in terms of the way it's got hold of pop culture and rap and R&B and hip-hop and musical theatre and kind of just brought it to a whole new level. So I just continued listening and listening and listening to it. And then I remember listening to King George and thinking, oh, this is a really cool song. Wow, what a great number. Because it is. It's kind of the only real sort of number in the show where somebody sort of comes on. But maybe Jefferson does in Act Two, but he's kind of established at that point. I thought, what a great song for a great part for somebody. And you know, had a little sing of it in the car and thought, yeah, I could probably sing this if I had a go. But didn't really think anything of it and just thought, well, they're obviously going to get somebody super famous to play this part, or, you know, somebody who's, you know, a bit of star casting. And about, God, this must have been a good over a year before I even auditioned for it. I mentioned it to my agent saying, you know, I'd love to be seen for Hamilton. She pretty much fell off her chair and said, I've seen it and it's one of the most incredible things. Yes, absolutely, we should try and get you seen. And then I went to New York when it had kind of just, it'd been on for a good 4 or 5 months in New York, and it was before the Tony Awards, but it was the big hot ticket. And I was in New York doing some press for something else, and I thought, well, I'll go and see it because I know people who could probably get me in and whatnot. Anyway, long story short, I couldn't get a ticket. I tried everything and didn't get a ticket, and stood outside this theatre practically in tears going, that show that I really want to see is on in that theatre and I can't watch it. Anyway, so that was that. I came home with my tail between my legs and didn't see it. And then probably about pretty much a year or so to the day that we were in rehearsals, I thought, do you know what? I'm going to do something that actors don't really do these days. Yeah, they call their agents, but I'm going to write to Cameron McIntosh myself. So that's what I did. I wrote a letter to, like a handwritten letter to Cameron McIntosh, Sir Cameron McIntosh, who owns the pretty much most of the West End. And sent it to his office at Bedford Square. And, I mean, he kind of knew who I was because I was in the film of Les Mis. And
yes.
My wife has worked for him a lot, Caroline. And he just said, yeah, I think that's a lovely idea. I'll put you on the list. So that was a really exciting moment.
Oh, wow.
In itself was like, wow, I've got an audition for Hamilton. And then I got an audition the week later and went in and sang all the material. And then I got a call saying it went really well. They want you to meet the Americans, which is what they say these days when you're up for a West End show. It's like, they want you to meet the Americans, which means it's gone to a different level. So I went in and met the Americans just before Christmas, and then I was put on hold over Christmas, which was really hard because I was really quiet at the time. There wasn't really much work. And then I got a call out of the blue in the new year to say the Americans are back in town and they want to see... When I mean the Americans, I mean Thomas Kail, who's the director, and Alex Lacamoire, who's the musical supervisor.
Was Lin-Manuel there?
Lin wasn't around, actually, because Lin was doing everything else that he's doing, everything else that he was doing at the time. So I didn't actually meet Lin until we got into the rehearsal process. But I then auditioned again, final audition at Cameron's office, and then got another call to say, you're on hold.
Oh.
And it was really positive. And I was waiting and waiting and waiting. And then eventually I got the call and they said, you've got the job. And it was just a really, really exciting moment. I remember I was about to go and put the bins out and I got a call from my agent to say, you got the job. It was one of those kind of, you know, feet on the ground moments. So, yeah.
Oh,
that was my story with Hamilton.
How wonderful. And did you tell Caroline, your wife? Was she the first person?
Well, she kind of knew because she was standing next to me when my phone rang. And, you know, you do that thing where you go, oh, they're calling, meaning your agent's calling. And when you know there's a call coming in that's either going to be a yes or a no, you can't help but sit there and wait for your phone to ring. It's really an irritating part of being
an
actor.
Yeah, I know. I get that.
So anyway, so when the phone rang, she sort of ran in and looked at me as if to say, is your phone, who is it? And I sort of nodded as if to say, yes, it's them. And then she could hear the conversation when I was like, you know, the reaction of, oh my God, oh wow, I got it, wow. And of course she cried a bit and I got a bit teary as well. And then we got quite drunk that night. It was a good night.
Oh, how wonderful. Then, of course, was it the big opening night that Prince Harry was on stage? So your great...
That was a great... I don't know what great, 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 great it is, but it's something like... I think it's six. So that was like 9 months into the... So we opened in the December, like literally the week before Christmas. And then they did this Royal Gala, which was on the... It was in the August, I think, because I'd been on holiday the week before. I'd been away and like proper summer holiday, had a week in Mallorca or somewhere like that, and completely switched off from the show, and then came back to this kind of chaos of the royals are in, and I had to sing that song. So I was quite nervous. I remember, I don't know what, there's something about when you have a bit of time off doing a show, in a long run of a show, and then you come back and you've missed that kind of adrenaline in your body, and you're almost more nervous in that first couple of days when you get back than you were when you initially opened. It's really weird.
But then you had to sing in front of what would have been, and I know it's only fantasy land, your six, so great, 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 great grandson, who then proceeded to sing a few lines of your song.
He did, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, the whole thing about me singing in front of him was kind of made a little bit easier because only a few people know this, but they actually did come and see it about couple of months before that, but they came kind of incognito. They were security. We knew that they were in, and they came in. They sat down just before the lights went down, and they left as the lights went up, and nobody knew that they were even there because I think they just wanted a night out at the theatre, and it was kept out of the press, and the royal press team didn't let anybody know that they were doing it. And then, of course, the gala happened. So I'd kind of got over the idea of performing in front of my great 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 grandson. But yes, indeed, the idea of doing that royal gala. I mean, it was like another press night. It was. I mean, if you were at the press night, you remember that the opening. It was mental.
Was mad.
I mean, people just went mental for that show. So yeah, it was a moment to tell the grandkids for sure. So yeah.
Well, if you please accept this as a compliment. I thought you were fantastic. I thought you were
thank you.
Really outstanding in it, and I loved how camp it was, but you took it seriously, and I love camp.
Thank
and
you.
We both trained at Guildford at GSA, and
that's right, yeah, GSA, yeah.
Certainly camp comes into 3 years training. You have to be able to embrace camp, and I think you certainly did.
Absolutely.
And then you won the Olivier Award for it. How thrilled were you? I mean, hugely, hugely, enormously thrilled.
Well, how? I mean, that's the thing. How does a person prepare for something like that? I mean, it's something that you dream about. I was lucky enough to be nominated for an Olivier when I was 22, just turned 22, when I did a show called Our House many years ago, and I didn't win. So I knew what it was like to kind of have all that excitement and then it not go my way, and it to be equally as exciting to just be recognised. So I was prepared for everything, really. But then, of course, when they call your name out and you're at the Royal Albert Hall, sat next to your wife, and you know it's on telly, and your parents are sat up in the gods watching, and it's for Hamilton, was kind of like, wow, I can't quite believe this has just happened. And especially when they called my name, I don't really remember much about that, but I just remember suddenly standing on stage at the Royal Albert Hall and going, oh God, it's happened. And there's however many thousand people sat staring at me expecting me to say something. And I luckily I had written something down, and I just read it. I didn't even come off the book. I just read it and got off, really. And it was amazing. I mean, just to be, yeah, to be, you're only as good as your last job, really. So to be recognised for that job means that I'm hopefully going to get more work out of it. So that's the main thing for me, really.
You should do. My goodness. And what is Lin-Manuel Miranda like? I imagine him, please tell me, okay, this is my fantasy world. I imagine him just full of laughter and fun and kindness and creativity, a real sort of bundle of that. Please tell me he's like that.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, he's an incredible man. I mean, to have written that show and to have written another show and all the other stuff he's written, I mean, first of all, his mind is just so inspiring just to be next to. Yeah, he's a lovely, lovely guy. And I mean, what I get from him is that, one, he's a writer and he creates this stuff, but it's the way he collaborates with his team. So Tommy Cale, who directed Hamilton, who's going to take over the world at some point. He just directed Fosse Verdon which won lots of awards.
That.
And yeah,
oh.
Yeah. And he, and I mean, before that he'd done bits and bobs on screen, but he's predominantly theatre and stuff. But he's going to be the next J.J. Abrams or Spielberg or whatever his path will be. And then Alex Lacamoire, who is Lin's musical collaborator. When it comes to Lin's music, he basically gives it to Alex, and Alex kind of takes it to another level. So Alex is also responsible for the music on, he doesn't write, but he does write on his own, but he's a musical supervisor, so he kind of looks after all of the music. So he also supervised the World's Greatest Showman and Dear Evan Hansen, and I mean, there's no coincidence there that those are some of the biggest productions in the world. So to watch Lin kind of come into a room, I mean, I think it was a strange process for Lin, because it was on in London, which obviously was a huge dream come true for all of them, especially him, but he wasn't in it. And there was nothing really for him to do at that stage, because he wasn't the director, he wasn't the musical supervisor, yet he trusted his team to kind of, and his and all the associates that get it on, To kind of just put it on. So he kind of stayed out of everyone's way until, I mean, like I said, I didn't meet him until what we call the Sitz probe, which is where you...
The what?
The Sitz probe. It's a German word for, I think it basically means where the orchestra meet the cast. It's an opera term. And it's where you play the music for the first time with the orchestra. And it's probably the most exciting day in musical theatre. It's where you get to hear the music with the band. So we did this thing called the Sitz probe, which is we went to some studio in southeast London and they set the band up in a room, and we all stood there with microphones and sang the music for the first time with the orchestrations. It was incredible. So Lynn was there for that, and I kind of briefly met him and said, "Hi, I'm Mike." And he went, "Hi, you're Mike. Yeah, you're playing the King. Nice to meet you. Good luck." And that was kind of that. And then he kind of was around, like he was just one of the team, really. You know, he would sit in the auditorium during tech and make the odd suggestion to the team, but kind of in quite a respectful way, kind of didn't get involved in, especially, you know, the Jamail and Ash who were playing Hamilton, you know, Jamail who played Hamilton seven times a week and Ash who did it on the Monday. He didn't sort of overpower them and give them notes. He's just a really good collaborator. He understands that this is a process and was just really respectful of that. And yeah, he was a really nice man. And then he kind of disappeared for a bit because he was super busy filming. I think he was filming his Dark Materials at the time down in Cardiff. So he was about. So he'd pop in and out, you know, and he was just very nice and, you know, a nice man. And I think it must have been very strange for him to not be in it, you know.
Oh, it's so lovely to hear. Well, I mean, obviously, we watched it. On Disney, they have it streaming. I think it's one of the biggest streaming things. But hopefully when it's open back on stage, then we can all go and see it in real life, because I'm missing live theatre.
I know. I think a lot of people are missing it. Everyone's missing live theatre at the moment. I mean, it's just such a shame.
You know what? When I was reading about you, and I obviously we're going to talk about Quiz, which was a massive, massive show. But you've been in some of the biggest films. Star Wars, Les Mis, 1917, Beauty and the Beast, Burton and Taylor, Riot Club. And then, of course, you were in Honour on ITV as well, which was so carefully done.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
I mean, the very, very, very difficult and traumatic and heartbreaking story. But ITV, I think, again, just handled it beautifully. It was so well written. All of you guys were just so... sensitive, really, really sensitive. I mean, that and Dez are the two shows that everybody was talking about in 2020.
Yeah,
brilliant.
No, I've been very lucky in terms of, you know, the work that I've done, and you know, I've been in some big films, and it's been a real
Star
experience.
Wars?
Yes, yeah. Star
1917.
Yeah, they've been some big ones, and it's been a real experience, you know, to be on those sets and work with some of the most incredible and what, you know, the thing that I find most interesting, because I'm an actor, is that once you're on set with these people, whether it's Anne Hathaway or Hugh Jackman, or they're just normal people, and that's what I find really, really interesting, is that they're just actors who get equally as nervous as everyone else and are just trying to make sure that they're doing the right thing and getting the words right. And I mean, George Mackay, for example, on 1917, which, I mean, he carries that film.
What a performance.
And he's such a nice, nice man. I mean, what a lovely, lovely guy. I mean, when I was there doing my bit on it, because of the way they shot it, which has obviously been in the press about, it was all one continuous shot.
Was it really, though?
Well, it wasn't one continuous shot in terms of, like, they shot it all in an hour and 50 or whatever the film is, but they shot it, they very carefully worked out exactly where the camera would be, so it would be shot in sequences with different cutting points. So my particular bit was me and George with hundreds of extras. So I was on set for that day, or that, well, it was a couple of days, like rehearsals and whatnot, but then the day that I actually shot, it was just me and George were the kind of the stars of that little bit, and George was just so normal and lovely, and, you know, wasn't taking it too seriously. He was having a laugh with the crew. They all liked him, he liked them. He was really generous with me and all the other actors that were coming on set. He would get involved and ask me about normal things, like, you know, my family and what I had for tea last night. It was just really nice to sort of, you know, and that's what most of the time, that's what you come across. You know, Matthew McFadden again on Quiz, who was just the nicest guy. Keely Hawes again, who they're all really nice people, and there's a reason why I think a lot of nice people do really well because they're just really good at what they do and people want to have them around. So that's what I find when I'm working on some of these big films. But yeah, no, I've been very lucky. And I mean, to be on things like Star Wars, I mean, when I got the call for that, it was really cool. Because I'm a 80s kid and, you know, Star Wars was sort of the thing.
I think it's one of those things that will go down generation after generation. Let's go to quiz, if we may, because I thought that was extraordinary television. I thought it was so well done. Everyone was talking about it, whether they believed the coughing or whether they thought he cheated or whether he didn't cheat. And it brought all of that back. But there you were acting with your cousin-in-law. Am I right?
Yeah.
Michael's your...
He's my wife's... So his dad and my father-in-law are brothers.
Right. Oh, there we go. First cousin. So there we are. He's your first cousin-in-law. Here's Tarrant. He's remarkable when he does those. He doesn't impersonate. He just becomes those people.
Yeah, yeah. And it was really interesting because obviously I know Michael as Michael, you know. My mother-in-law's
family.
Nephew. And he's always busy and I occasionally spend a bit of time with him and he's always very lovely and we talk about normal things. And then, of course, I saw him in the makeup chair because I'd already been filming for a week or so by the time he arrived and I walked into makeup and he was sat there with his wig on and I was like, oh my God. And he just looked at me and he went, do I look all right? And I mean, again, he's a normal guy just wanting to make sure that... I was like, yeah, God, you look incredible. And then he walked on set and it was actually the scene where, because we were shooting all the stuff in the courtroom, so I'd been sitting around doing all sorts that week, just listening to various actors come in and be cross-examined by Helen McCrory and other people. And then Michael came in, dressed as Chris Tarrant. It was his first day. It was a big set because there were lots of extras being, you know, the crowd in the jury and whatnot. And he walked on set speaking as Michael, kind of, but dressed as Chris Tarrant, and various people coming up to him, fussing around him because it was his first day. And then Stephen Frears just went, because there's no nonsense with somebody like Stephen Frears. He just gets on with it. And of course, he trusts Michael so much because he's worked with him so many times. And it was a case of, right, okay, we'll get on with it, and action. And off we went. And Michael opened his mouth, and it was the first time anybody had heard Michael do Chris Tarrant. And it was just incredible. And we all just sat there and sort of, I remember looking at Matthew McFadden and Sian, who played the Ingrams, and just going, and like smiling, just going, wow, oh my God, it's really like him. And then everybody, I mean, not that everybody sort of, it was like a sigh of relief, but everybody was just like, wow, this is going to be really good.
But you as well, sorry. Look, Michael's wonderful and lovely and I adore him. And when I've met him, he's a charming, lovely man. I think he's a brilliant actor. But this is about you because I have to say your performance in it was extraordinary.
Thank you.
And it must be, you know, you were a critical part of the whole story. So this, in case people haven't seen it, they've got to go back to ITV Hub and watch it. But it's about the coughing on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And of course, your character was a key component of that because he's real. I mean, so you were, again, you were playing a real person.
Yeah, Tequin Whittock. Yeah, no, it was really interesting to play him. And I mean...
He's the guy that was part of the quizzing
causes
community.
Causes all the questions, yeah.
Yeah, and he coughs.
Yeah, he's the guy... Well, allegedly coughs. He's apparently, to this day, he is adamant that he has nothing to do with it. I mean, I've not met Tequin, but I met his son. His son came on set and he was a very lovely guy. And you know, and I think the whole thing was a very traumatic experience for all of them, whether they did it or not. But yeah, it was an interesting role to play because, I mean, in the entirety of the actual show, I didn't actually have that much to do, but I was always there. Like, Helen McCrory, for example, had so much to do because she had so many words to say. But yet she was only filming for a week or 10 days, whereas I was filming throughout the whole 5-6 weeks of filming. I'd often just be in the background coughing without anything to say. It was just a really interesting experience to work with Stephen Frears and to see somebody again at the top of their game, just being brilliant at what he does. And of course, James Graham, who wrote it, who's like, he's younger than I am. I mean, you know, I'm 40 this year and I think James is, he's early 30s and he's just one of the most brilliant and lovely people that the theatre and drama in general have, because he has such a brilliant take on the way human beings go from A to B and how the politics of the world affect that. And, you know, to take something like Quiz, which originally was a play, and I have to give a shout out to my mate Gavin Spokes, who is one of my best friends, who played Charles Ingram in the original play of it that was on in Chichester. And Gav was incredible in it, as were the rest of the cast. And James did such a brilliant job of that play, which was directed by Dan Evans. And then for it to be taken by ITV and turned into a TV show by Stephen Frears, and then for me to be there and be surrounded by these people was just such an incredible experience. And again, it's that word collaboration, which I mentioned earlier on about Lynn and Tommy and Alex Lacamoire, was there again with the producers of Quiz and Stephen Frears and James Graham. They were constantly having conversations about how to make it better and make sure that the audience understood what was going on. And it was just a really fascinating thing to sit back and watch and be a part of, really. So, yeah, I feel very fortunate.
Well, yeah, but also because you're really good at what you do. You know, you really are, and you become those characters. To take on the role of somebody else who's a real person is a much tougher thing for an actor.
Well, it is, but at the same time, you kind of have this source material that you get to work off, but then you get to put your own interpretation, because that's kind of what acting is, whether you're playing somebody who's real or not. You just use the source material that you have, whether it's, you know, like when you get these castings come through to you at 5 o'clock on a Friday for a self-tape saying, this guy is a 40-something guy with lots of problems in his life, and that's all you've got to work with. So you've got, whereas if you have a source material of somebody that, you know, there was video footage of Tequin, so I did look at it and see what his characteristics were like. I mean, obviously, he's a bit older than me, or he was when these videos were taken, and, you know, but you try and just take something of it. And I mean, that's what Michael Sheen is so brilliant at, and he's had so many opportunities to be able to do that, to play people that we all know so well and to do his own thing with it. And I think that's what brilliant acting is. And again, it's just making it truthful. And to go back to, you know, Hamilton briefly, that's kind of what I tried to do with King George, was to take the kind of, you know, who was this guy? Ultimately, he was the King of England. Nobody ever said no to him. And America had just said, sorry, we want to break up with you. And I mean, so to put that into context of how he would deal with that, it's like, you can't say no to me. And then to put a song on top of it, do you know what I mean? It makes it funny. So that's kind of my process.
Do you know, the strangest thing is, throughout this whole chat with you, which has been a joy, so thank you, I've been saying, through it all. I've got the song in my head.
The ear
because
one.
Oh, it really, really
da,
is.
Da, 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 da,
da, da, da, da, da, da. Don't stop me, because then I won't stop. Really, it's such a pleasure to speak to you, and congratulations on all that you're doing. Do you know what's next? Oh, you said you're writing a film, or you want to do a film, your own film?
So, yeah, so I've got things that are coming out. There's a couple of things that I've got coming out. So Honour came out, Quiz came out. I'm in Edgar Wright's new movie called Last Night in Soho. I've got a sort of cameo role in that, which I'm really looking forward to seeing that. I'm in a film about Roald Dahl, and it's got Hugh Bonneville in it and Keely Hawes, and it's about their life with their children, and I play a nice role in that. But I had a busy year leading up to sort of lockdown, but then so the other thing I'm doing is I'm pursuing the rights for a children's book at the moment, which I'm trying to turn into a theatrical piece with music with a friend of mine who's a very prolific young film composer who's never written any music, called Benjamin Wolfish. So that's something we're doing. And then, because I was involved a few years ago in a musical called Eugenius, which was on at the Other Palace. I was meant to be the co-director of it, but couldn't do that because it all happened at the same time as Hamilton. And so I was involved in sort of creating that with the writers of that. And I enjoyed it so much, the creation of kind of shaping and dramaturging this musical, that I really want to sort of do more of it. And like I say, I'm a musical theatre geek, so I know a bit about it all. So I'm hoping that I can, you know, do my own.
Goodness me, you couldn't be more busy, and I'm delighted to hear it. I love to hear when an actor is busy doing what they love to do.
And it's so cool to talk to you, because obviously, you know, I used to watch you on The Big Breakfast and all the other shows when I was younger, and then obviously when I went to GSA, Guildford School of Acting, a lot of people would talk about who went there, you know, Michael Ball, Celia Emery, Gabby Roslin, and I remember doing I didn't do it, but all my year were involved in that. There was a big concert at the Yvonne Arno Theatre for Ian Ricketts.
Yes,
and
I was
came
there.
On and did something, and I And I remember a couple of my friends saying that they'd met you and how lovely you were.
So, oh, yeah,
I remember coming to watch it.
Well, that's very kind of you. So thank you very much indeed. What I'd like to hear is actors not having to retrain and doing exactly what they love and what they do brilliantly. Long may you thrive, my lovely.
Thank
and congratulations.
You.
And do send your wife my love as well.
I will. Thanks, Gabby. Cheers. Lots of love.
Bless you. And now, as promised, here is my chat with the very sweet singer, Pixie Lott. Pixie, do you know what? It's very funny. My husband said to me this morning, oh, who are you speaking to? And I just said, I'm speaking to the girl who epitomizes the word sweet. And I mean that with such Aww. Love. I think you must be one of the sweetest people that I've ever met in this industry.
Oh my gosh, that's so nice, Gabby. But coming from you as well, that's too kind. Thank you.
You really are. You know how thrilled I am that you're doing The Voice Kids, because it just fits perfectly with you, because the amount of charity stuff you do, the work that I've seen you do with kids through World Child and other things that you do, and the amount of times that I've interviewed you, you have the kindest, sweetest soul and heart. You really do. So your parents must be very proud.
Oh, that's so lovely, Gabby. I don't know what to say back to them. Thank you so much.
Just there we go.
Oh, but I feel the same about you. You're so lovely. Whenever I see, I think the last time I saw you was at Well Child, wasn't it?
Yeah, amazing charity. Absolutely amazing. And my goodness, charities need help right now. But can we just talk about Oliver, who you know I adore as well. So what's happening? You and Oliver have been together, is it 10, 11 years?
Yeah, it's 10, like nearly 11 years, I think. It's been a long time. We moved in to a new place, finally. We've lived in the same flat for 10 years. So we've just been surrounded by boxes and bags and like so much stuff. And I'm just wondering how it's all going to fit in and where we're going to hang everything up. And even like today, doing this from the new place, our Wi-Fi hasn't kicked in yet. So I'm trying, I've like hotspotted my phone so that I can talk to you today, and the TV's not linked up yet, so it's all a bit crazy settling into the new place. But we're very excited, and obviously we were meant to get married.
Yes. So what's happening with that?
Well, we've got big families, and so we want to wait till there's, you know, the rules are not in place where we can invite all the people that we want to invite. So we're just sort of waiting, and we didn't want to, because obviously the rule changed to 15 people, and it's not really going to be good for us, because I've already got like so many bridesmaids, it goes over 15 anyway. So we've got to wait now. So hopefully soon, as soon as like we get the green light, we've got like the place we love, we've got loads of things decided, and then we can just go full steam ahead.
Oh, well, listen, good luck. I know so many people have had to delay.
Yeah.
For you guys and for everybody else who's going to get married and celebrate, it's tough. It's tough, isn't it?
It is. It's very different times, as everyone's saying. But we've got something to look forward to, and we just have to, you know, enjoy what we have and, as always, like make the best out of the situation. So we're definitely keeping busy with all like the house move and stuff like that. And then, yeah, when the restrictions go, then we can crack on with the wedding.
Oh, well, do send him my love, because, you know, I think he's lovely. He's
such, I will.
You two are so well suited. Those children are going to be beautiful. They're going to be ridiculous. We mentioned The Voice. So let's start with that. It's very interesting because people saw you as a pop star, and I know you, of course, as musical theatre, and you've been in movies and things, but that suddenly changed the way people perceived you. Is that just me watching that from the outside, or do you think that has made a big difference?
I don't really know. I don't really, I guess I don't really focus on that side of things, like how I don't really know how I'm perceived, but it's something that I've absolutely loved, and it's a world that I grew up in completely from such a young age, from as young as I can remember. So I know exactly how it feels to be in their shoes. you know, going through those audition processes, which I still do now to this day. And I love working with the talent. Like, it honestly blows my mind. They're so amazing. They're so young. They've got their whole careers ahead of them. And I just love working with that talent and also building their confidence. And a lot of them come to the show and they don't actually realise how brilliant they are. And it's such an experience, such an amazing platform for them to learn so much and take it with them as they go into the industry. But it's brilliant. It's so feel good. It's so warm. I really, really, really love it.
Maybe I'm not allowed to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I've said it to your face. I'm going to say it now. I prefer it to the grown-up one.
Well, I say that, but I'm obviously biased. I'm pleased that you think the same.
No, I really do. You were really young. You were in Chitty Bang Bang on stage. You were in Sound of Music. I mean, as a professional, not just at school shows. What was that like? Were you aware that you were doing something incredible and different than your friends? Or was it just because you were that age, you just took it in your stride?
Yeah, I guess for me, like, I've honestly been performing and singing my whole life, like I said. So it sort of felt like a natural step. And I went to a performing arts school. So all of my friends were all singing and dancing up and down the corridors. And it was just a world that I grew up in. So I didn't really know any different. But I just knew that I loved performing and music more than anything. And it's something that has helped me stay just so focused, because I always had something to strive towards. Some of my friends wasn't sure, you know, which industry to go into or what career they wanted to go down. And I've always been so sure. So I've always had something to strive towards.
So it's music above all the others, even though you've done musical theatre, is your pop career, your music career, the sort of the top of that?
I love so many different sides of performing, and I'm sort of obsessed with getting as rounded as a performer as possible. So that's like acting or dancing or anything that is in that world, because I think it helps you as an artist overall. But my number one will always be writing and performing my own songs. That's what I've loved doing. I started like writing my first album that got released at like 14.
It's amazing, 14.
I just loved it, and my passion hasn't like died down. I still absolutely love it. I think that will always be my number one. But I love learning new things as well. So I'll always take on new challenges in that field. And obviously, when I went to performing arts school, we did musical theatre growing up, so I love that as well. And I love all your, on Instagram, Gabby, your singing videos and your, when you do musical theatre, so it makes me so happy. You're so positive and it's so nice to wake up and watch your videos and see so much joy.
But musical theatre is, you know, it's something I absolutely love. I really, really do love it. And you were so good in Breakfast at Tiffany's. I snuck in and saw that. And after I'd interviewed you on TV about it, and I went to see it, and it was just, it was lovely. It was a perfect place for you. And that's, I think I'm sort of trying to push you to go back and when it opens, and it will be back, and it will be bigger and stronger than ever, I hope. The musical theatre, because of Strictly as well, so you can dance, you can sing, you can act, you have extraordinary stage presence. It would be a shame not to do musical theatre.
Oh, thanks.
Just for me, because I love it. I love it.
Thanks so much, Gabby. And I did. I absolutely loved doing Breakfast at Tiffany's. And thanks so much for coming to watch it, because I learned so much. I learned so, so much. It's definitely like the hardest thing I've ever done. Is it like, I love doing tours with my band and doing my own music, and that's amazing. But this was so much harder. We did like 8 shows a week for almost a year, and it was such a dense piece of writing. And the second act was so dark, because it was based on the book, not the film. And so it got me to a really like sad place. So doing that over and over and over and over, I learned so much in the acting side of things. But at the end, I was so drained, I think, because it was a lot. It was so much. But again, one of the most rewarding experiences, because I learned so, so much. And I think every little experience like that does help you overall as an artist.
Yeah, I'm not, you were so good. But I think, so I know for a fact that your favourite film, I might be wrong, you might have changed it, is Pretty Woman. Pretty Woman is going to be the musical on stage. And obviously it's been postponed. I think you should do that.
Thank you, Gabby. You need to be my agent.
Okay, no problem. That's it, done. I've got you the job. No, not at all. Okay, so on to the music stuff. Now, obviously yesterday I was going through everything. I was in a pixie land. And my goodness me, your collaborations and people you've written with. I mean, collaborated with Stevie Wonder, John Legend. I mean, they're huge.
Yeah, I can't actually believe it. Even you just saying that there, it was just crazy. I think that was my second album, and they're like two of my heroes. They're both so incredibly talented, and they were literally being in the right place at the right time scenarios.
How did it happen? How did that come together? How did you and Stevie Wonder?
Well, he's like one of my all-time favourites. Like, just, you know, as you know, just like a living legend. And we were actually, I have to think back to it, we were in the same restaurant at the same time. So we were just so lucky. And he was sitting with someone that I knew from years before.
No way.
So he came over and was like, oh, can I introduce you to my friend? I was like, sure. But I didn't know it was Stevie Wonder. And I came over to the table. I was like, oh, my gosh. And I was like, my eyes were welling up. It was like mad. And he was just the most loveliest, just most gracious man ever. Just everything that you'd hope and more. And then from that's how we got to do a collaboration. So I wrote a song with the guy with the mutual friend, and Stevie featured on it playing the harmonica, and he sounded just like so amazing, and it was so cool.
And then how did the John Legend come about?
And then John Legend collaboration came about because, again, we have a friend that we both knew, and we got introduced. I think she'd sent him some music, and then, and this was a long time ago as well. This was album number two. And we were both in New York at the same time. So, and I think we had the same publishing company. So we just met at the studio and to see if anything came out. And he started playing the piano straight away. It just sounded like insane. And a song was written so quick. And then it went on the album.
Oh, that's incredible. See, I mean, I love the fact that even hearing you talking about it, and you're a huge star and everybody knows who you are and around the world and everything, but I love that you're still in awe, and I get the feeling that you get in awe of people. Are you like that when you see somebody that you really respect? Do you go to bits?
Of course. Like, oh my gosh, of course. They're like absolute legends. And I remember, like, definitely meeting Stevie, I was like just taken very aback. And also I had that with Mariah Carey. I remember it was a very, very brief encounter. Very, very brief.
What happened?
My eyes welled up again. And I was like, oh my gosh. And it was like a 2-second meet, but it just was like, oh my gosh, wow.
And is there anybody that you'd still like to do a collaboration with or to meet? And would you well up over them?
I don't know. I guess you don't really know until you're there in the moment and it happens. But I'm sure I will definitely have that again if that happens. But collaborations wise, there's so many.
It could be anybody on the planet, okay? So I've now got a magic wand. Ooh. And it's to grant you the collaboration of your dreams. Who is it?
Oh, there's so many.
It's waving now. It's waving. Diddly, 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 diddly.
So, like, for the new music that I've been making, a lot of inspiration has come from, like, Fleetwood Mac, Joni Mitchell, Carole King vibes. So any of those would just be unreal. But also Coldplay, Chris Martin, that would be amazing too.
Well, we can make that happen. Hold on a sec. Hi, Chris. I'm just, you know. He seems he happens to be here. Yeah, yeah. Chris, Pixie would. Yeah, that's Pixie Lott. Yes, she'd love to do it. What's so odd is I'm looking over there as if you can't see, but I'm looking in that direction as if he really is over there. Yeah, if I can make it happen, I would for you, my sweet. So, what new stuff? Tell me about the new stuff then. That sounds really sort of folky. So it's more folky.
Yeah, there's definitely has those influences. I've been really loving writing this new stuff because it's literally just been me and a few guys, which is the first time I've ever done an album like that. Usually there's loads of different people and loads of different sounds and go to loads of different places. But this has been a very cohesive sound and body of work, and it's just very raw and honest, and it's the music I've always wanted to make, really, but it's taken me a long time to get to this place. And it's nearly finished. We figured out a way how to do it over, finish it over lockdown. I've got like a little bedroom setup going on that was hard at first because of all the technical difficulties and setting it up and the sound wasn't coming through and all of this, but we figured it out now and it runs smooth. So I think I can finish it off like through these times because usually I have to fly to LA because they're based over there, but we've figured it out.
And when's that going to come out? Do you know? Do you have any idea?
Not sure just yet. I think once we've finished it all up, then we can make the plan of when it can come out. But it really is like an album sound. So I don't want to, you know, do drop singles or EPs or go down that route. I still believe in the album.
With having so many number ones, do you, when you release new music, do you have that really awful fear that, oh, I hope it gets to there, or I hope it doesn't, or if it doesn't, that, do you have all of those fears, or do you just go with the flow?
I tend to go with the flow only because if I start focusing on all of that, then I'm just going to go down a rabbit hole, and that is not going to be good for anyone. So I've always just gone with the flow. You know, you do what you can, and then you let it out and see what happens. And if it sticks, it sticks. If it doesn't stick, it doesn't stick. And you just keep on going. Keep on keeping on.
Yeah, well, you will. You've got, there's so much that you've still got to do. It's amazing. Can we just talk about the World Cup song? Was it 2014? Was it 2014 you did the World Cup song?
I can't remember when that was.
I think it was something like that. Oh, my God, I have no idea where time goes. This year doesn't count, so that's only...
Yeah, this year doesn't count.
No, it doesn't count. We're not including this year. So that, and just singing with all the other people and everything. I just get the feeling that you love to be around people and that you love to work with lots of people.
Yes, I do love... I'm a people person. I love collaborating. I love working with new people. And, I just think it... You know, playing off each other and collaborating and brainstorming ideas and things like that. I love that.
And how about all the modelling and because now you're a podcaster as well. So all of these other things, they're all sort of secondary then, are they? In a nice way, in a nice second place.
Yeah, I guess music will always be my first love. But there's so many things that I love as well. I have so many different hobbies and things, but it's fun that we can sort of do them all. And sometimes that's my problem, though, I think, because I do have so many other interests. I've got to keep focused, you know, on one thing. I think that's what I find hard sometimes. But I love doing the podcast. I love your podcast, Gabby. Pleasure to be on.
Bless you.
Yeah, and I think it's fun to keep other interests going, to mix it up a bit.
I do. I know about something that you can do, which is a really strange thing that I found out online. And what's really strange is I'm going to ask if we can do it now, which I don't suppose it will work online, but is this
what
true
is
that you are the world's greatest starer, that you can outstare somebody without laughing?
I know, it's so weird. It's like the weirdest thing ever, but I can stare. I'm a good starer. So weird.
But you just, and you cannot laugh.
No, I laugh during it, but I don't blink. Usually, you know, the other person will blink first. It's like staring competition. And I can just hold that gaze and I don't blink.
Word. How did you find out that you had this hidden talent?
I don't know how I found out. I can't remember. I was just, I don't know how it came about. I just figured it out somehow.
And oh, it's so funny.
It's a good little party trick.
Well, let's try it now. Okay. Now you have to
How can
stare.
We try? Well, so you just have to be honest if you blink.
Yeah, no, yeah, we will.
Okay.
Right, okay. Three, two, I'll keep talking though. Okay. And see if you can not blink while you're talking at the same time, okay?
Okay, and you're going to do it as well?
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm doing it. And I'll tell you if I blink. Hold on, I'm getting the blinks out. Blinks are there. All the blinks have gone. Okay, three, two, one. Okay, I'm not going to blink. I'm going to tell you if Oh, I blinked straight away.
Oh, you blinked already. That was an easy one.
Oh, no. Okay, all right. I'm going to see how long you can not blink for. So I'm going to ask you questions and see if you can carry on not blinking, all right?
Okay.
Okay, three,
two. I've got to focus.
Well, yeah, three, two, one. I bet I'm going to make you blink now. I know I can make you blink. So, Pixie, I ask everybody in these podcasts what makes them properly laugh. So whilst not blinking, you have to tell me what makes you properly laugh.
Oh, my God, Gabby. I've blinked already.
Yes, you see. You see.
Oh, my gosh. Should I tell you what it is? I think I've cracked it. Why I'm a good starer. Oh, my God. Sorry. That was my glasses falling off.
That's right.
I've cracked it. It's because at the moment I'm in my glasses, because obviously this is like just audio, so I haven't got my makeup or my hair done, my glasses are on. And usually when I do the staring competition, I've got my contact lenses in.
That's what it is.
And they keep the eyes going. They keep the stare going. I've cracked it. That's the secret. So when I've got my glasses on, I'm rubbish.
That's so funny. I've got my glasses on too, so I'll blame my glasses. Yeah, I'll blame my glasses. So what does make you properly laugh? Because you like a giggle. I've seen you giggle a lot.
I love a giggle. What makes me laugh? I love watching funny films. I love going to see stand-up comedy. I actually did have... I booked tickets to see Matt Richardson do his stand-up show. Obviously, that's been postponed. I just think laughing's really important.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Oh, my God, yes. 100%.
Like, if you're feeling a little bit down or a bit overwhelmed, I always recommend watching a funny film, a comedy film, rather than something intense, you know, on Netflix that's, like, quite deep. Go for a comedy and it just makes you feel so much better.
Okay, which one?
Oh, which one? I always think a classic comedy is Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, it's very funny. That is funny. I'm now tempted. I might go and do that this evening. Right, that's my choice for tonight. I mean, I have to say, you gave me Dumb and Dumber. I'm going to give you When Harry Met Sally.
Because oh my gosh, I love that
funny.
Film.
Yeah, there we go.
Classic.
I've given you a film. You've given me one. That's it. The other thing I know about you, which is a really weird thing to know, that if this is true online, that you have mayonnaise on everything.
I do. Yeah, I do. I love it. It's a classic. It goes on my roast dinner. But now I found a combination where I put my Tabasco in my mayo, spices it up a bit, and that is delicious.
Why don't you make? You should actually bring that out.
Should I?
Yeah. The pixie pickle or the pixie, the pixie spicy mayo. Oh, yeah, I've got it there.
Oh, I love it. You're giving me lots of ideas today.
There we go. Yeah,
well, you're my agent now, aren't you? You can make it happen.
While we watch Dumb and Dumber. You are a complete and utter delight. Carry on being the delight that you are. And will you please let us know as soon as you... have that new music out, because I will be singing, not singing your songs, but I will be singing the fact that you got new music out, because I just think you're adorable. As I said, please send your family my love, because they should be very proud.
Oh, thank you so much, Gab. It's so lovely to catch up with you. Hopefully I'll get to see you in real life soon.
I hope so. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the podcast. Coming up on next week's episode, we have the wonderful Judge Robert Rinder, MBE, That Gabby Roslin podcast is proudly produced by Cameo Productions. Music by Beth Macari. Could you please tap the follow or subscribe button? And thank you so much for your reviews. I promise that the team and I have read them all, and we really are rather overwhelmed, and they really mean the world to us. So thank you so much. If you kindly leave a review or a comment, that would be lovely. Thank you.